from WLVR HD2 Bethlehem and Lehigh University. Welcome to Prof Talks, where you can hear from members of the Lehigh University faculty as interviewed by student DJs and journalists. Prof Talks offers a personal view of Lehigh faculty while offering the professor and student an engaging look inside the mind, the person, the journey, the career, and the contribution our Lehigh faculty give to our students every semester at Lehigh University. Welcome to Prof Talks with Lehigh student DJ and journalist Lainey Delaney.
Hi, I'm Lainey Delaney with WLVR and with the Brown and White here at Lehigh University. This is Prof Talks. Today, my guest is Professor Paul Salerni. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Lainey. How are you?
Good. Fantastic. How are you?
Fantastic.
Glad to hear it. Today, we're going to be talking about upcoming events at Zollner, music events this semester. But first, I was hoping to do a little bit of a dive into your musical background and into your background as a professor, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
What appealed to you specifically about conducting? You mentioned before we started recording that as a kid you were a rock and roll musician. So how did you make the transition from rock and roll to conducting?
Classical music was always there in my life. I actually started my musical life as an accordion player, which is not necessarily classical, but then I was told by my elementary music teachers that I should learn to play the piano, and that's how I got into classical music. But like most humans in my generation, we were not unaffected by the Beatles and
right.
Motown, and so I always played in a band, and I played in a band through college and even in graduate school. So, but conducting and composing was what I really wanted to do ever since I was around 12. It was always there in my life. And mostly, conducting has always been an adjunct to writing music. For most of us who write music, one of the ways to get one's music played is to be able to conduct it. And also, conducting is something that is a useful tool, especially if you're a teacher. And so that's always been part of my life.
Awesome. What initially stuck out about the accordion? That's kind of a quirky entrance into music.
If you think about the ethnicity of working class America in the 1950s, it's not quirky. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a place called New Britain, Connecticut, where about 40% of the population is Italian American. The other 40% is Polish American.
Right.
Well, the standard instrument between those two ethnicities is the accordion, right?
Yeah.
So it was a total natural. There were so many itinerant accordion teachers. One knocked on the door one day and came in and said, "Your kid want accordion lessons?" And Mom and Dad said, "Sure, you want accordion lessons, Polly?" I said, "Sure."
Cool. In bands then, you said in high school and college, what instruments did you play then?
I played either drums or keyboards, but mostly towards the end keyboards.
Okay.
And, you know, I had a Fender Rhodes electric piano and then eventually a synthesizer. And we did all that stuff. You know, we did the covers of the Beatles and covers of James Brown. They only let me sing when it was James Brown because my singing voice is so terrible.
Yeah, I'm actually a drummer myself, and I played in a funk cover band last year, and we did some James Brown ourselves.
It's the most fun.
Yeah, it is. It's very lively. It's very danceable. That's what's most important.
Yeah, and it's actually really had a place in my life because even though I'm a highly trained classical musician and, you know, of the most refined quality of having, you know, roots in the great composers of the 20th century, it's always been part of my life, and so even in my music. So for instance, my most maybe famous piece is a one-act opera where it goes back and forth between very straight-ahead classical music and jazz, because the story is about exactly this facility. It's about a radio station, and the radio station's going from opera and classical music to easy to listening. And so the marketing team comes in, and whatever they sing, it's always pop stuff. Andrew Sisters, James Brown, a spiritual, and then the other characters sing in normal or operatic fashion. So there's this kind of juxtaposition of the styles that both styles that I grew up with.
Did you always find that you were so open to various genres, different kinds of genres?
Sure. And, you know, I think it's a very interesting dichotomy that you know, some people call classical music high art and popular music low art. I just think there's good art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's, you know, my two musical heroes are my teacher from Harvard, Earl Kim, who was a very refined classic musician, and Miles Davis, who's, you know, one of the great things. So for me, they're equal geniuses, mm-hmm. or different kinds of geniuses.
Right. I saw on your website that you did something. It was a 52 songs in a year, one song a week project. Would you tell me more about that?
Sure. So that's another interesting thing that, or kind of moment of congruity between the art or classical music world and the popular music world, is that there's a great tradition in classical music of what's called art song, which is taking extant poetry and writing a piece of music from that extant poetry, you know, poetry of you know, Shakespeare, or poetry of Frost, which is something that I've done. And I started doing that because my teacher was so good at doing that, and I never was really interested, and it became a passion of mine. And it's also a place where I can do what I just described to you, which is to integrate things that are popular music and things that are classical music. And I discovered about a year and a half ago that in the course of my life as a composer, I'd written 52 different songs. And I figured, in this generation, how do you get known? You don't get known by doing, you know, CDs anymore, right. or by doing live concerts. You get known on the internet. So I decided I would post one a week on YouTube.
Okay, awesome. That's very cool. I also saw on your website that you have a passion for involving young people in music. And how long would you say that's been an important part of your life?
Well, for a long time, obviously. I'm a professor, and that's mm-hmm. that's
yeah.
That's,
I'd hope that's a
job.
Quality a professor would have.
Yes. It's also because of my own children. So I have mm-hmm. two sons, both of whom started their musical lives at the age of three in what's called the Suzuki method. They both started on the violin. One is now an incredibly accomplished professional violinist, and the other one's now an incredibly accomplished percussionist. Mm-hmm. And they actually, for better or for worse, make life as classical musicians. So through them, I actually got involved in the Suzuki method. And the Suzuki method is one that posits that children should start music very young. They should start music without reading music, but rather by imitating. The way you acquire language is by imitating your parents. Through the ear, exactly, yeah. Not through the eyes. Mm-hmm. And so I started writing pieces for those kids to play, and I just like kids. You know, I'm an Italian. I like the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and so I started writing a lot of pieces for kids and putting on a lot of concerts for kids. So when both my children were young, we would go around to elementary schools in the Valley and play concerts for elementary schools and middle schools.
Was it something that you thought about a lot before you had children, that you wanted them to be musicians as well?
Oh, if I had thought consciously about it, I wouldn't want them to be musicians. It's a really hard life. But it's interesting because I have a sister-in-law who was involved in the Suzuki method, and I listened to what I thought were the very interesting precepts of the philosophy of the method. And I said, yeah, that's good that you start music at a young age not to become a musician, but rather it actually helps you in terms of intellectual discipline, in terms of cognitive ability, mm-hmm. in terms of socialization, all those good things to make you a better human being. So mm-hmm. I figured that's good. Whether they become musicians, rather not, but if they do and they love it, fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for better or for worse, I think my two sons love it.
Yeah, I'd hope so if they've made a whole career out of it.
Yeah, and they've worked so hard, and, mm-hmm. you know, they struggle mightily, I've always are quizzing them, are you happy? and I hope that the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Was music something that was important to your parents as well?
Music was important to my parents. It's I think it's part of Italian culture that music is important. Neither of them was a musician. I had one uncle who played the trumpet, but I mean, the idea that your children could play music was highly valued. Mm-hmm. And they were, even though, neither of my parents went to college, they just thought that any skill that you acquired, especially music, was going to be a wonderful thing to have. And, they were extremely happy that I was a musician.
Mm-hmm. Shifting things more towards a Lehigh focus then. Can you tell me more about the Lehigh University Very Modern Ensemble?
Sure. So one of the things that composers do, especially in my generation, because it's a little difficult to get, or rather sometimes strange music played all the time, is to create your own group. It's like having your own band. And when I was in college, my some fellow composers and I started the Asparagus Valley Contemporary Music Ensemble. And when I got to Harvard, my best friend, fellow composer, and I started the Harvard Group for Our Music. So it was in my kind of DNA by then to start a new music group. And when I got to Lehigh by the third year I was here, 1982, I said, well, we need a new music group at Lehigh. And it was a very specific model where it would combine student players and faculty players and guest artists. And we would do new pieces, but also pieces from the kind of standard repertoire of the 20th and 21st century. And that's been going on since then.
What do you think are the benefits of the model of having performing artists, professors, as well as student artists all together on one stage?
Well, it's a terrific learning experience for the students. Oftentimes they're playing next to the person who's teaching them how to play their instrument or teaching them how to sing. And so they see how those professionals approach the job of making the music is invaluable experience. And plus they get to play pieces they would never play if it were just students.
What role do you play in putting together Lehigh music events at Zollner?
Well, for love me, I'm the dude in charge. Yeah. I figure out what the program is. I figure out, okay, students can play this. I need to hire these pros to play this. I have to deal with the entire staff. For the one coming up next weekend, it's because it's not only music, it's theater. So I have to hire a stage director. I have to get a costume designer, a lighting designer. I have to be the producer. It's a big pain.
Very involved.
Pain in the butt. I'd rather just have to do the music, but part of your job. Sometimes you have to do things that you don't necessarily love doing.
Right. That's life.
Yes.
What do you look for in touring musicians who accompany Love Me? Is it LUV?
Yes.
Or Love Me?
The Lehigh University Very Modern Ensemble. Obviously chose the name so I could have a really catchy, title, and it's also a kind of plea because modern music is so often not loved that, come, you might actually love this if you come. I just look for quality. I look for someone who is also going to be good with the students, but also is going to, just do a wonderful job. And, I never had an issue finding great musicians. In some ways, there are too many wonderful musicians in America. We have tremendous training schools and tremendous amount of talent, and not everybody who deserves to work works, which is why I'm a little scared for my children.
Before we dive into Zollner's events, we're going to take us to a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment with Professor Solarini to talk more about Zollner's upcoming events this semester.
You're listening to Prof Talks.
Hi, this is the big O, Otis Redding. I was just standing here thinking about you. Thought I'd write a song about you and dedicate it to you. Take a listen. If you didn't go back to school this year, you're really not groovy. Maybe you feel that school is a drag, it just don't move you. But did you ever think about how square you look standing in an employment line because school didn't interest you? You really hard to think about it. Without an education, you could only be a tramp. Broken shoes, no haircut, just plain old country. Don't worry about the fellas on the corner calling you green because you're betting your future condition. You're really hard to think about. And furthermore, tell them that Otis Redding say you're very wise because you'll be at the top when they get there. And if they make it, when they get there, if they make it, when they get there, if they make it, you really ought to think about it. Think about it, really ought to think about it.
Welcome back to Prof Talk on WLVR FM HD2 Bethlehem.
You're good at this.
Thank you.
You're very enthusiastic.
I try.
I often go up to WVIA. So I used to go to WDIY before concerts. They're not doing it as much, but WVIA.
All right, we're back with Professor Solarini. I'm Lainey Delaney, and this is Prof Talks. So let's dive right in. Tell me about what's upcoming in Zollner this semester, next weekend, anything exciting coming up soon.
Well, the big event for me personally is a concert on Saturday, February 29th at 8 p.m. in Baker, free for students, only $10 for adults. It's called Sam and Earl, and it is a concert to commemorate the 100th anniversary of my composition teacher, a man named Earl Kim. Let me tell you a little bit about Earl. Earl was the son of Korean immigrants, grew up in California, got interested in music, ended up studying at UCLA with Arnold Schoenberg. Arnold Schoenberg, if your audience doesn't know who Arnold Schoenberg was, he was one of the seminal composers at the beginning of the 20th century, basically revolutionized classical music, invented a system called 12-tone serialism that was adopted by many of the classical composers, certainly through the mid part of the 20th century. So just a huge figure in music. And then Earl went on to teach at Princeton for 15 years, and then he taught at Harvard until he retired and died, and I was a student at Harvard. And he's best known in the musical world for very idiosyncratic music, and did not write a lot of music before he was 40, but when right around then he discovered the writing of Samuel Beckett, the great, you know, man of letters of the 20th century, the playwright who wrote Waiting for Godot, maybe the most important play of the 20th century. And by setting Beckett's words to music, Earl kind of found his voice. And he spent about 15 years of his life just setting the texts of Samuel Beckett, smaller pieces, bigger pieces, pieces that took texts from Beckett and set them to music, but then eventually taking complete plays of Beckett and setting them to music. One of those plays is called Ajo. Ajo was a television play that Beckett wrote in 1965. And it's simply a play where you see a man sitting on a bed in a foul old housecoat, and you eventually just hear a woman's voice, the voice in his head, telling him about all his lousy relationships with women, with his mother, his father, his God. And what the action of the play is that the camera simply gets closer and closer to his face as he tries to get the voice out of his head. It's a very, wonderful and typically Beckett-type theatrical production. And as part of one of two evening-long series of pieces on Beckett texts, music by Earl Kim, Ajo was one of those things. And what Earl did with Ajo was to take the woman's voice and put it in part inside a musical ensemble, two violins, cello, two trumpets, trombone. So that person narrates with music going along, and in a screen above the head above the heads of the musicians, there's the actor's face. The actor's actually also in the hall, and there's a cameraman moving close in on him. It's a very, unique theatrical production. So that's one of the pieces we're doing on the concert. Very important to me, because when it was premiered, I was the first conductor of it. My wife was the stage manager. Wasn't my wife then. She was just my girlfriend then. And we spent hours and hours working on this piece with Earl Kim and with the very famous actress who he got to do the part of, a woman named Irene Worth, probably unknown to your generation, but as a Shakespearean actress, both in the United States and in Britain, extremely famous, and it was really an honor to work with her. And that's a piece that I think has been done maybe one or two times without my wife and myself actually being in charge of it. And what's unfortunate about it is we've never gotten a good video of it. We did it actually here at Lehigh in Lamberton Hall in the 1980s. I remember Gus Ripa from the theater department played the actor. And so one of the things to commemorate Earl's 100th birthday was to make sure that we had a very good videotape of this. And so that's part of why we're doing it. And the other thing that's exciting for me about it is that my wife is still doing the directing. She's working with the actor, but she's actually going to be the woman's voice.
Oh, wow.
And she hasn't acted on stage since she was in graduate school. She's a theater director and an opera director. But we actually did this piece once in Korea. It was actually on national television in Korea. And there was a wonderful soprano who was doing the woman's voice. But because the soprano had so much to do on a particular concert we were doing in Korea, the night before we were doing a dress rehearsal, she said to me, she said, "Paul, I want to save my voice. Laura knows this piece better than anybody." Laura is my wife. Laura knows this piece better than anybody in the world. "Can she just sit in for me and do my part?" And she did it. And all the guys in the band went, "Wow, that was terrific." So I thought that for the definitive production of this, the person who really knew this piece best in the world should be the woman's voice. So we got her to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome to have that relationship with the piece. It's like followed you through your life.
Through my life.
When was the first time that you helped produce it?
1979.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, the year before I came to teach at Lehigh, actually about 6 months before I came to teach at Lehigh. It was, you know, one of the great experiences of my life, because this was an evening long, you know, seminal time. I mean, first of all, Samuel Beckett did not allow very many people to set his words to music, and he gave Earl Kim, my teacher, permission. And, you know, this evening long thing that, you know, got lots of play. In fact, if you go to Time Magazine in January of 1979, there's a picture of A. Joe, and there's a picture with the ensemble players and the actors, very big image of the actor's face above and some hands conducting.
Mm-hmm.
My hands. the only time I made it on Time Magazine.
You can still boast that, though.
I show it to everybody.
Hanging up on the fridge.
Yeah. So that's one of the two big pieces on this program on Saturday the 29th. The other is the second of the pieces that Earl Kim made music for that is a complete Samuel Beckett play. The play is called Footfalls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, very simple and Beckettian. There's only one character on stage. It's a woman dressed in a tattered robe, ghostly. And all she does is pace. Nine paces one way, nine paces the other way. When she gets to the end of the strip of life within she paces, she speaks. She speaks. And she speaks to someone. She's speaking to basically her mother, who is a voice off stage. And she talks about their relationship, and she talks about whether she was at this particular event in church or not. And there's all the terrific ambiguity, and there's a terrific love between them, and there's a terrific animosity between them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tremendously Beckettian, not necessarily concrete, not necessarily linear.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Earl had permission from Beckett, and he made it into an opera. So it distinguishes itself from A. Joe in that in A. Joe, there's no singing, there's speaking. There's actually one line that's sung, but this is a combination of singing and speaking all the way through, and there's just one character on stage and then one character in the orchestra pit who you don't see but is the voice of the mother, and she sings and speaks, and it's accompanied by two pianos and harpsichord.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another piece that, again, my wife and I kind of, I don't want to say own because it sounds a little grabby,
right. But
we own it. If anybody does. So we actually spent the entire summer of 1981 living with Earl Kim and his family in his house in Cambridge, because I was co-teaching a course at the Harvard Summer School with him, which was devoted to doing the first workshop performance of this piece. And then the next time it was done at the University of Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, because my wife was a guest director there. And she wanted to mount the piece, and we mounted it, and we took it to Ohio State. It won some kind of award. And I think the only other time it's been done twice at Lehigh.
Mm-hmm.
It was done in 1990 in Lamberton. It was done in the year 2000 in Baker. And I think the only other time it was done was at the second Beckett International Festival in The Hague in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing an international festival, and someone had heard that there was this one composer who had permission from Beckett to set the music. So they actually, that's right. That's the other time they did A. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
They did it there, and I coached both of them, and I was there with Earl Kim to coach both of them. So, but otherwise, the only productions of Footfalls that I know have been produced by my wife and myself. So again, it's very important that we get a good document of this. And it's a very, again, you know, on the outset, Beckett can lose people because it is so strange and you know, kind of abrupt, and it comes in short little things, and it's not very concrete or linear. But if you stick with Beckett and you start hearing the overtones of all the words that are said, it becomes very dramatic. Mm-hmm. And this has a very dramatic ending where the woman really goes into a kind of tirade. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we did it in Lamberton, the singer said that when she got to the final line of the piece, and it's actually that it goes, "For the love of God and something of the Holy Ghost," it's kind of this big spiritual thing and very angry. Mm-hmm. She said she saw a black entity.
Oh, wow.
That scared the hell out of her. And she said, "Paul, I am never doing this piece again." So I think
it's cursed.
It's cursed. Exactly the right word. So, you know, it's a wonderfully strange and very moving piece. Some people find it very compelling because it's about, you know, the relationship of a mother and a daughter. Yeah. And odd in Beckett's work, because most of Beckett is populated by men, but here are two pieces very much about women, mm-hmm. which I thought was great. And A. Joe really is, for me, you know, it's prescient about the Me Too movement, because it is really about that woman telling this guy how abusive he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. I and, you know, it's not like anything you're going to see.
Yeah, that sounds powerful.
We think if we do a good job on
it's summoning ominous black figures.
Yeah, there you go. And that concert actually has a piece that starts, which is another historic piece for us, because in 1990, we did a festival to honor the 70th birthday of Earl Kim, and he had just written a piece in memory, very short piece, in memory of a famous singer who had just died of leukemia, tragically. Her name was Jan Di Gaetani. Jan Di Gaetani was actually an important person at Lehigh because she was famous for doing a piece by Earl's teacher, Arnold Schoenberg, this guy I mentioned before, mm-hmm. called Piero Lunaire, one of the seminal pieces of the 20th century. And we received a donation from an alumnus named Weinstock, and we turned it into an artist in residency. And our first artist in residence was Jan Di Gaetani. Her final performance of Piero Lunaire, this famous piece from the 20th century, was done in Lamberton in 1988, and she died the year afterwards.
Oh, wow.
And so the piece in memory of her, written by Earl Kim, was done exactly in the same space. Mm-hmm. We're doing that piece to start the concert. And that's our typical Love Me piece, because the singer is a pro. Mm-hmm. The flutist is Robin Connie, who's our Lehigh's teacher of flute. And then the four percussion players are all Lehigh students.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our good thing. And then in the pit for Footfalls, my new chair is the other pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have, so there's a lot of integration of students and pros in this.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you're excited about that's coming up at Zollner?
Well, as there's always something exciting at Zollner.
You're shaking in your seat here.
Yes, I have to watch myself. I get so excited and, you know.
You're welcome to be excited. This is the perfect space to be excited.
Well, you know, and if why would one go into this business if one weren't passionate? One's not going to get rich being a musician.
Yeah.
Especially a classical musician. So like I was saying about my children before, if you don't love it, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the following day, and this is, again, part of this is all season long. So we've actually had four concerts in memory of Earl already mm-hmm. this season.
Wow.
Three concerts in September that were all art song concerts, mm-hmm. where many of the 52 pieces of mine that we talked about earlier were played. And, you know, world-class singers. The woman who was in Korea, who my wife substituted for, she gave a recital. Mm-hmm. The woman who's going to play the main character in Footfalls, who's a mezzo-soprano named Gisela Laurisdottir, very famous mm-hmm. from Iceland. She's going to play the main character in Footfalls. She gave a recital. The woman who's going to be the woman in the pit playing the mother, she gave a recital. So mm-hmm. those are the three recitals. So and then at the beginning of this month, we had another wonderful singer named Jan Opelak give a recital where he did a piece of Earl Kim's. So those are the four. The one we just talked about was the fifth. And then the following day, our faculty quartet called the East Winds Quintet. Did I say quartet? Quintet. East Winds Quintet does.
Cues are tough.
Yes. And quartet and quintet are so close together. Four or five, you know.
It's basically the same thing.
Basically. But so we have for a long time had a faculty quintet.
Mm-hmm.
And a quintet is, this is a woodwind quintet, so it has a flutist. Miss Connie, who we mentioned, an oboist, David Diggs, who's a Lehigh professor and does the marching band and does all of the wind ensembles. Clarinetist Steve Reistetter, a horn player who's a guest guy, and a bassoonist named Ping. So that's five players, and they give a concert every year. But David Diggs, who's really in charge of the group, was very kind and said, well, Paul, how can I integrate with your celebration of your teacher, Earl Kim? And I said, there's lots of ways we can do this. And I should say that as a side by that, Earl Kim was actually really important in the history of Lehigh, because in the 80s, when we were thinking about and raising the money and designing the Zollner Arts Center, Earl was on our visiting committee. So he was, you know, a distinguished professor from Harvard. So in the old days, you would bring distinguished professors in your field from other places to tell you how you're doing and to really advocate with the administration about what this entity, this music department needs.
Right.
And so Earl came and he served on our visiting committee. I remember him just wowing the then president, Peter Likens, saying, look, at these guys deserve to have this. Your campus needs to have a wonderful arts center to make it the integrated university it really wants mm-hmm. to be. And I think that was very compelling. Mm-hmm. And I think that in some ways tipped the scale so that mm-hmm. President Likens really took this to heart. In fact, he said to Earl directly, said, Professor Kim, if we don't have an arts center by the time I leave Lehigh, my presidency will have been a failure.
Mm. Look at that.
Yeah.
With the interdisciplinary focus here, it's so important to include arts in that, because so often, like, we see the intersection of, like, the engineering, the business worlds, like our math brains all come together.
But... Ah, you hit my on my favorite thing, which is that there's a great quote from the novel by Thomas Mann, Dr. Faustus, that music is the wedding of mathematics and theology.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. There's the
beautiful.
And you know, coming from Harvard, which is a kind of effete and sometimes prissy place. What was great about Lehigh was that my students, many of whom were engineering or business students, were so focused on getting things done.
Yeah,
it's very concrete,
pragmatic.
Exactly, good word. And that was really a joy, and it was really what attracted and kept me at Lehigh. And really, I would say the preponderance of my best composition students have been engineers. I've sent some on who weren't, and they go on and they do what I do, and that's wonderful. But really, some of the most brilliant, even right now. So. One of the things we'll talk about is at the end of the semester, there's my kind of senior star composer, a guy named Kevin Wyckoff. He's a terrific percussionist, mm-hmm. terrific composer. He'll have just a concert of his music at the end. And he's a mechanical engineer.
Wow.
And he's just terrific. And he's also playing, he's playing on the concert on that we're describing right now, which is the one on March 1st. So let's go back to that, if you don't mind.
Of course. Okay.
So
take us wherever you want to go.
Here we go. Turn on a professor. The professor talks. It's automatic. So Professor Diggs said to me, he said, well, what can we do? And I said, well, there's this wonderful piece of Earl Kim's that comes from his other Beckett evening. So we're doing some Beckett, all Beckett on Saturday night. And it's called Rattling On. And it's a virtuoso piece where there's a singer who both speaks and sings almost nonstop. And it's like a tirade. It's like a rant. Mm-hmm. And it's accompanied by three wind instruments. So the instruments of the quintet, a violin and a cello. And we had to have violin and cello on the evening before. So they'd already there and a percussionist. Then we have this aforementioned Kevin Wyckoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, let's do that piece, Rattling On. It's a tour de force. And I think everybody will either be impressed by it or just, you know, run from the hall screaming.
And risk we're willing to take.
Yes, always. I mean, if we don't take risks,
Why
are we here? And so what we decided to do was to design a concert around that piece where the musical family from both successors and predecessors would be represented. So in the center of this concert is this piece by Earl Kim. Going towards the end of the concert, the next piece is by his teacher, Arnold Schoenberg. Mm-hmm. And the piece that ends the concert is by Schoenberg's teacher, Zemlinsky. Going back from Rattling On, before Rattling On, is a piece by Earl's student. That would be me. And then there's a piece, beautiful piece, by a student of mine who graduated from Lehigh, Tai Sakamoto, went on and got a doctorate in composition, is a beautiful, beautiful composer. Mm-hmm. So there are five generations of people related to Earl Kim on this concert.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Would you say that, like, it seems like kind of bringing people back, like having recurring performers, like, and recurring pieces throughout your work is something that you've been doing for decades.
Decades, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is my 41st year at Lehigh.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many concerts I've been involved in. Mm-hmm. You got to figure at least an average of three a year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of concerts.
Is that something that's important to you, bringing, you know, old friends back?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially, and it's been especially important to bring the Lehigh students who have gone on to do music as a profession. Mm-hmm. It's a rare thing. And it's also good that it's a rare thing. Mm-hmm. But there are several who have come back to have pieces played. There's my first really great student, Mike D'Ambrosio, who is a full professor of composition at Murray State in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. There's Tai Sakamoto, who I just mentioned. There's a woman, Heather Gilligan, who is just a music minor, chemistry major from Lehigh. Mm-hmm. But she took composition class with me, and she went to become a chemist. And then she said, you know what? I really love doing music. And she went on and got a doctorate at BU. She's a tenured professor at Keene State. Mm-hmm. So we want to bring all these students back. In fact, the piece of Ties that we would hear that Sunday concert was part of a concert that was celebrated the sesquicentennial of Lehigh, where all those students mm-hmm. wrote pieces for that ensemble and came back. It was quite a wonderful moment for me to have all my former students write something to celebrate the institution where they were born.
It must be very rewarding.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm ready to retire. I did enough.
Uh-huh. You're retiring soon?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm at the age when one should retire. Mm-hmm. The problem is that it's too... The university has been surprisingly supportive of the crazy stuff that I do. and to give up that support...
It's hard to let go.
It's hard to let go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I also, I mean, it gets personal now, but mm-hmm. one of the things I've discovered as a composer and is the model is my teacher, Earl Kim, which is that you get better.
Yeah.
Athletes don't get better because their bodies break down. Mm-hmm. Singers don't get better because their body breaks down. Mm-hmm. But the more you write, the more knowledge you acquire about the instruments you're writing for and the internal knowledge you have about what you want to express, the better you get. I think I'm a much better composer now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I feel like, oh, now's the time that I've acquired all the capacities I need to do. So I'd like to spend a little more time writing music.
Mm-hmm. It becomes wisdom, from knowledge to wisdom.
There you go. I hope so.
On that note, we're going to take another quick break before we hear more from Professor Salerni. This is WLVR HD2. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Prof Talks.
So when you get to the corner of Smith and Orchard, you're going to want to take a
left. You are not going to.
Then what you're
going to
do is turn onto Marcy
and Brett
Avenue.
Just broke up
and go past
and
the first three
she's
lights,
happy about
and then
it.
Take the next left.
I don't really
drive
think
five
she's
more
happy,
blocks,
but
and you should be
who
there.
Who am I to judge, right?
Park
anyway,
on the right. That's
I'll
what
see
I
you
heard
later
last
tonight.
Night.
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Prof Talks on WLVR HD2 Bethlehem, a Lehigh University student production.
This is Lenny Delaney with WLVR HD2. I'm back here with Professor Salerni, and we're going to continue talking about the upcoming events at Zollner. So, what's next on the docket?
So, after spring break, The next big event is a faculty recital by our professor of violin, Michael Jorgensen. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting concert entitled Partita. Partita is a kind of musical piece that is usually a bunch of four to five to six separate pieces, and they're usually dances. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, especially in the Baroque era, composers wrote these, you know, dances like minuets and courants, they're called, and jigs or gigs or stuff. And they were grouped together. And some of the most famous partitas, maybe the most famous partitas, were a set of partitas and sonatas for the solo violin written by Johann Sebastian Bach. There are six of them. There's three sonatas and three partitas. And the most famous of the partitas is called the D minor partita by Bach. And the final piece in that partita after a number of dances is a chaconne. A chaconne is a musical piece that has a recurring harmonic pattern. And what the composer does is to take, you know, it start with this harmonic pattern, usually with a melody line, and then write a set of variations. Bach was so brilliant that he wrote enough music to take 14 minutes straight, just the solo violin.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Remember, solo violin doesn't go below the G, below middle C, so it doesn't get very low. And it only has four strings. You can only play two at once.
Yeah.
And somehow he makes this brilliant piece out of all this that is kind of the, it's kind of the sine qua non. It is the epitome of violin playing. And I think that Professor Jorgensen, like most violinists, wanted to play this piece. It's a piece my son has been playing since he was 14. And before Michael Jorgensen, one of our professors, was a violinist named Paul Cho, who also played. So every violinist I know wants to play this piece.
And it's legendary.
You know, it's just a great piece of music. It's monumental and meaningful in ways that, spiritual in ways that you can't imagine. So I think Michael, what he wanted to do was to put partitas around it, pieces that are groups of dances around it. And so one of the pieces he wanted to do was a piece for guitar and violin written by a Spanish composer named Manuel de Falla. And so that's on the concert. And there's a set of pieces for violin and piano that are Romanian folk dances. So it's a kind of partita by Bela Bartok. And then the other piece on the concert is a piece by me, which is called Two Partita, because it's just two players, violin and guitar. But it's also a little bit of a play on the idea of duality. So in my piece, like we were talking before, so there's, it starts with a non-classical dance, then there are two classical dances, and then a non-classical dance, classical dance, and a non, so three are non-classical dances and three are classical dances. So it starts with a bossa nova.
Fun.
And then it has a corrente, which is a very classical dance, and then it has a siciliano, which is a classical dance, and then it has a jazz dance one, and then it has a sarabanda, which is classical, and then it ends with a jazz dance. So it's really bipolar.
Yeah.
So it's a partita that's both got, you know, somewhat Jimi Hendrix rock and roll stuff in it.
Very cool.
But also extremely classical. So it's kind of typical of the music I have. So that should be a very fun concert. And the, nice, because you get a lot of variety of things. So you get just the violin alone. You get two pieces that are violin and guitar, which is not a very, it's a very rare combination. And then one piece with violin and piano.
It sounds very eclectic.
Very eclectic.
Yeah.
Yes. Spanish, Italian.
Yeah, it's got it all.
Got it all. Romanian. Got it all. Yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
I see next is our brilliant Lehigh University choir. And the choir, of course, has two kind of ancillary groups. So the choir, of course, is mixed in terms of gender. And then there's the high voice choir, which we call dolce, which we used to call women's choir, but it's really a high voice choir. And then a low voice choir, which is called the glee club. And they're giving a concert called Groundbreakers. So one of the things we also have in the music department this year is we have what I call the Horger Artist in Residence Fund to use. So many of the people I'm bringing for the concerts I just described to you are being funded by that artist in residency. The other group we're bringing as Horger Artists in Residence are the Princeton Singers. The Princeton Singers is a group of professional singers from Princeton, But the director is Professor Samets, who is, mm-hmm. of course, the director of choral arts activity here, and my longtime colleague. We came to Lehigh on the same day.
Oh, wow.
So we're 41 years together like brothers.
And, that's a bond.
Yes, and, you know, very close. He's the godfather of my second child.
Oh, wow.
And a brilliant composer and really one of the premier choral conductors in the country. Mm-hmm. And he has a colleague, Sunmin Lee, who they work together on the choir because we have so much choral activity here. It's really extraordinary for a university of our kind to have this much singing.
Yeah.
And besides the singing, the classical singing that they do, there's, you know, lots of a cappella groups.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a very singing university, I think.
Yeah, something that definitely surprised me when I first got here is, like, especially given the size of the university and, like, the kind of disciplines people draw from, where it's like I was saying before, like, it's a lot of mathy people.
Yeah, but mathy people are musical people.
Yeah. They don't always realize it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely surprised me to see so many a cappella groups on campus, but there's so much singing here.
Yeah, it's terrific. And, you know, it helps us all. But they're doing a concert called Groundbreakers. And so I think the way they chose the pieces was to pick, and this is actually goes along with the fact that we're doing Schoenberg this year. And so they have pieces by Machaut and a Estonian composer who is very important in the late 20th century named Avro Part. And they're doing pieces by the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So they're running the gamut.
Yeah.
So that should also be an extremely fun concert.
Mm-hmm. Another eclectic mix.
Yeah, another eclectic mix. And then, as always, we have a series of concerts by the Lehigh jazz groups. So mm-hmm. Lehigh, again, it's amazing how much stuff we have.
Yeah.
I mean, so in the jazz world, we have two complete big bands, you know, mm-hmm. with, you know, five saxophones, four trombones, five trumpets, complete rhythm section, two of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have four combos.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually get together and play a very entertaining kind of marathon concert.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one on that. Yeah, that's got everybody. Friday, April 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be fun. We also have, as I mentioned before, Professor Diggs does Wind Ensemble. And Wind Ensemble this year, the concert's on May 3rd. This is, again, typically Lehigh. So all these groups that I keep talking about, choirs and wind ensembles, they're professors in charge. But in terms of the management of the group, it almost always falls to the students.
Mm-hmm. Very student-driven.
Very student-driven. Like, for instance, the Marching 97.
Yeah.
Students write the shows. Students do all the marching rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
Students do all the management.
Mm-hmm.
The professors there to oversee things, to take care of the you know, the professional musical part, mm-hmm. but really in terms of the nuts and bolts of it. It's
yeah.
the students. Well, and the concert for the Wind Ensemble this year recognizes that. So Professor Diggs chose none of the music.
Mm-hmm.
The students chose all the music.
Mm-hmm.
So the concert is called By Request.
Oh, I like that. That's fun.
It's fun. And also, I just discovered that my star student, who I talked about earlier, Kevin Wyckoff,
mm-hmm.
besides writing all the stuff we'll talk about in a moment that he will have on his final concert, he's been writing a series, a partita, actually, mm-hmm. because it's a series of dances for Wind Ensemble. And the Wind Ensemble has already tried the kind of third piece in this is called Masquerade Party. And it's mm-hmm. It's in a minuet, so it's one of those dances you would find in a partita.
Mm-hmm.
So that piece will be on that concert, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin's going to have a couple of days because the day after that concert, which is on a Sunday, the traditional final concert of our semester is the concert by the student composers at Lehigh, my mm-hmm. students. And this year, last year we had five students mm-hmm. who were graduating, all of whom had pieces played. So it's a rather long concert. It's
yeah.
probably about an hour and a half. But Kevin's the only person graduating this year.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to have... he has written a piece on poems by Emily Bronte
mm-hmm.
for guitar and mezzo. So the mezzo-soprano who is singing in the Earl Kim production is singing his pieces with the guitarist who is playing with Jorgensen because
mm-hmm.
they're both Horger artists in residence. So that's
it's all connected.
It's totally connected. And the reason I pushed Kevin to choose this is that I knew I would have these tremendous professionals available to us. Mm-hmm. So he's writing, that piece is already done. Mm-hmm. And he's writing an even more ambitious piece. He's a terrific percussionist. He's especially good at mallet percussion. Mm-hmm. He plays the marimba very well. Last year he played a marimba concerto with the Lehigh Orchestra. Mm-hmm. So he's writing a piece for marimba and string quartet. And the string quartet is our faculty quartet. So it's Professor Jorgensen and our second violin teacher, Erica Dicker, and our viola teacher, Sharon Ulster, and a cellist. We couldn't get our usual faculty cellist, but a cellist. So totally professional quartet and another student who's playing percussion. So it'll be a concert simply devoted to Kevin's music on May 4th at 8 o'clock.
That's very exciting.
I hope it's exciting for him. It's exciting for me as his teacher.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of stuff coming up.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, and all this correct as well is free for undergraduates for the
absolutely.
Most part. Yes.
Just show up with your ID and please come.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I taught last semester a newly constructed course that's the kind of entrance course or introductory course to the music department called Foundations of Music. And one of the things I really wanted to do was to require the students to go to many of the concerts by their fellow students. And one of the things I really got back from the course was how amazed they were by how talented Lehigh students are and how much is going on. So, yeah, it would be great to have the entire university community realize that, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Something I liked a lot about being a journalism major is that so much of it is being able to edit other people's work, interact with other people's work, like just learn from your classmates. And that's really valuable.
Yeah, it's great. And also to find out the breadth of activity. You know,
yeah.
One of the things that I love about Lehigh is that I think that the athletics teams are great because I know that these kids go to class.
Yeah.
I know that they're smart because they can't be athletes and not be going to smart. Uh-huh. Some of the best non-music students I've ever had have been the athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm huge fan of basketball, and so you know one of my heroes is CJ McCollum, who continues to give honor to the university by
we beat Duke
but you know he's you know on the executive committee of the player association because he's so smart and he, you know he's so literate and because he learned it from the major you have.
I think that that's something that I do like about Lehigh, like in you know going off of the theme of earlier of like all these eclectic performances that we have here, like that's kind of one of the defining characteristics of being a Lehigh student is that we're so eclectic. Like we have all these random hobbies and random interests in places you'd never expect.
Right. And it actually is contrary to the image in the world that, this is an engineering school.
Yeah.
It is great engineering school, but it has so much other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. On that note, before we close out this interview, I just wanted to ask about any classes that you might be teaching next semester that you want to plug, anything like that.
Sure. For the general, I have to teach classes for my composing students. Then, you know, you have to have lots of prerequisites for. But the one class I'm teaching for the general population is called string quartet. That may be a little daunting because the string quartet looks like one of those classical ensembles. But
very serious.
Very serious. And it is actually very serious. But the string quartet is a kind of a perfect lens into the history of Western music because in my mind and in my own work, composers, when they write for the string quartet, for some reason, it is their most deep, most intellectually arresting music. So when we think of the late Beethoven quartets, they're his greatest pieces in my mind, or Mozart's quartets or Schoenberg's quartets. And it's just because it's a very flexible and virtuosic ensemble with so many possibilities. Mm-hmm. That it really is a great lens and it's a great literature. And I keep telling my son who plays in a string quartet that he has the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. You're playing, you're not an anonymous person in an orchestra. You don't have the pressure of being the soloist in front of the orchestra, but you're with three other great musicians and you're playing the best literature that was ever written. You're a lucky kid. You should thank Dad.
It retains the intimacy without having the pressure of all of the lights on you.
Very, very good. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. So, my string quartet class will be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like it. Well, thank you so much, Professor Salerni, for joining me today.
My pleasure.
I'm Lainey Delaney. This is WLVR. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Oh, I got to go rehearse.
Thank you for listening to Prof Talks on WLVR-FM HD2 Bethlehem. You can find this interview and more at our website, go.wlvr.org/podcasts. And thank you
for listening to Prof Talks, a Lehigh University student radio and journalism production, exclusively at WLVR 91.3 FM, HD2, Bethlehem.